you know, we're human. We're not, I know we're in the world of AI and machine learning, but we're not bots yet. And so when you see someone struggling through an experience with your product or service, it really illuminates the need to go in and where to go when you go to improve upon that experience or that journey for a customer.
Hi, everyone. I'm Tracy O'Rourke.
And I'm Elizabeth Swan.
And we are from GoLeanSixSigma.com, and you're listening to the Just In Time Cafe podcast, where we bring you fabulous apps, polls, news, books, and people so you can build your problem-solving muscles.
Tracy, have you ever heard of a cafe Coretto?
No, sounds Italian.
It is, and it means corrected coffee. The Italians fix their espressos with a little bit of grappa or Sambuca or brandy.
Sounds yummy. Well, we can't have faulty coffee, can we? We need to make some amends.
Good idea. I think I got a whole bottle of countermeasures right here, and I'm going to bring it into the private dining room.
This is going to be one heck of a podcast. Elizabeth, could we have a tasting menu today as well?
Of course, Tracy. We've got lots to sample. I got to interview Dana Wilson, the VP of Customer Experience Assurance for Comcast Cable. And depending on where they live, I'm guessing a lot of our listeners are her customers too. Great revelations about how not to just get the voice, but also the look of the customer. In this month's poll, we'll find out what our listeners find most valuable in a coach. In the news, we've got a nonprofit offering Lean Six Sigma training. And although they've got C4 in their title, they do not make dynamite. And we've got a question from an avid podcast listener about whether you can have any impact if you are the only black belt in your company.
Remember to stay tuned for this month's coupon code in order to get a discount on GoLeanSixSigma.com's online training.
Let's get to the poll.
Okay, so we had another poll on coaching. What did we find out?
We found out that people were not getting the coaching they wanted in a previous poll. So this past month, we asked, what do you value most in a coach? And here's what we heard. 6% said, when they tell me how to proceed. 26% said, when they make it safe to make mistakes. And 29% said, when they let me bounce ideas off them. And finally, 35% said, when they connect my work to the bigger picture. So that's 90% centering on make it safe, let me bounce ideas, and connect me to the bigger picture. So for those of you who are coaching and mentoring, I think that's helpful information. Does any of that surprise you, Tracy?
No, not at all. I think what this is telling us is people really want to have autonomy to solve problems. They don't want to be told what to do exactly. They don't want to be told how to proceed specifically. They want a partnership and collaboration in solving problems. And so who doesn't want that? So I think it's a good message for leaders to say, how am I actually relating and connecting with the people that report to me?
Nice. Good way to learn.
For our next poll, we're trying to understand project timing. Our question is this. How long does it take to complete a black belt project 80% of the time? Obviously, some take a lot longer. But 80% of the time, how long does it take? And here are your options. A, 6 to 12 weeks. B, 3 to 6 months. C, 6 to 12 months. Or D, 12 months or more. Enter your selection right on the website, and you can check out the Pareto charts from the past polls, too.
I'm Elizabeth Swan, and you're listening to the Just In Time Cafe podcast. We'd love your feedback. Please leave us a review on iTunes or on our website, and don't forget to subscribe.
Up next, it's in the news. So there's a nonprofit with C4 in the title, but they don't make dynamite. Tell us a little bit about that, Elizabeth.
C4NPR is the name of this organization, and that translates to the Center for Nonprofit Resources. So acronyms always leave you guessing a little, but there's no dynamite, but they are dynamic. So they are Ohio-based, and their main goal, their mission, is to help other nonprofits succeed in every aspect of creating, building, and running their organizations. There's a ton of resources, some of them free, some of them for pay, but they offer workshops like grant writing, communication, leadership, And this fall, 2018, they're going to host a Lean Six Sigma certification program for green belts. So specifically focusing on Lean Six Sigma in nonprofits. And we here at GoLeanSixSigma.com are providing the online training along with remote access and on-site coaching. So a really nice blended on-site and remote program. We've been lucky to partner with this organization since they have a broad reach and they've been helping other nonprofits for a really long time. The online application closes soon, so if you're in a nonprofit in the Cincinnati area, please check this out. We'll leave you a link.
I'm Tracy O'Rourke, and you're listening to the Just in Time Cafe podcast. In a short while, we'll get to hear Elizabeth's interview with Dana Wilson, Vice President of Customer Experience Assurance at Comcast Cable. Next up, it's a question from one of our learners.
What do you think, Tracy? Can you make it work if you're the only black belt?
That's a really good question. And unfortunately, with limited resources these days, probably coming up more than we would like to know. Today's Q&A comes from Aaron, who is an avid listener of the Just in Time Cafe podcast. Hey, Aaron, how's it going? He's considering becoming a black belt, but he'd be the only Lean Six Sigma practitioner in his company. And his question is, can you be effective as the only black belt in your company? It depends, but one challenge I do see is if it's a part-time black belt for one organization, meaning they have a regular job too, it equates to less success. But having even one fully dedicated black belt can be a force for good. I've seen one fully dedicated black belt have tremendous success with supporting projects and helping green belts be successful. So the challenge for the black belt, though, is getting overwhelmed quickly. If a black belt is trying to do it all without teaching others how to do some of it themselves, they're going to drown in the sea of never-ending action items, and people are going to feel like they're not being supported. So the trick is to be sure that you're teaching others to fish, not fishing for them. Don't be the project lead, be a resource to the team. Have a very clear set of expectations for you and for others. One black belt should be spending time building green belts into peer mentors and even working with early adopter leaders to build coaches. So the whole idea is that you're not doing it yourself. In this situation of limited resources, the one question that should always be answered but is almost always missed is this: how do I replicate myself or the role of a black belt as quickly and effectively as possible? And there should be actions that this black belt is doing to help that to move further along in the journey so they don't feel like they're doing everything. Elizabeth, what do you think?
As you say, it depends. One of the key factors is whether or not you have leadership support. So that is a non-starter. If you don't have support, you're dead in the water. But if they support your efforts to become trained in continuous improvement, that's a huge start. So the next question is, how big of a company is it? Are you a tiny, tiny cog in a massive machine? Then that might just be what they call a Sisyphean effort, right? You're constantly pushing against a very large infrastructure. But if the company is not so big, there are things you could do to keep it from being a lonely position. So, you know, one of your roles, if you're a black belt, is that you're going to be coaching other people and you're going to be conducting just-in-time training. And so you could set up simple things like a 5S or an 8-waist walk after giving some colleagues or some direct reports a primer. You could also include them on process walks, and that gives them a chance to voice their process experience, also hear others and learn from them. You could find out from others where they see process issues that they might be interested in joining you to resolve them. Or as Tracy said, you could set them up and let them run with it, you know, be a resource for them, but say, hey, you know, fix what bugs you. I've given you some tools. We just reviewed Humble Inquiry, a great guide on how to create an atmosphere where people are comfortable discussing what's wrong. And there are webinars about all these tools. There are single modules. You can send them the links to Yellow Belt training if you want to help some people within the organization get trained. I mean, I'm assuming you would, if you were the only black belt, you wouldn't want to stay that way, right? You want to spark other people and get them interested in training and help that they catch the bug. There's also a great webinar on how leaders can support continuous improvement. And that's something you might want to pass along to the leadership that I'm assuming would support you. So lots of ifs and depends in there, but I think at a really basic level, I'd get that training just because I'd be curious and I'd want to have that in my own resume and have it as my own personal development.
And I'll just add one other thing too. You should really explore the flipped classroom concepts where you have people get training. So a lot of people will try to do the training all themselves, and that is a lot of hours. So the flipped classroom basically means that they're doing online training and you're doing some follow-up with learning the key applications and applying the concepts. So that could save you a lot of time if you've got something like that. So definitely check it out. We've got a webinar for that too. Just go to our search feature and type in flipped classroom and you'll get some information.
Great ad. Good luck, Erin. It's time to announce the coupon code.
This code is for 20% off any of our Lean Six Sigma training and certification courses, including white, yellow, green, and black belt, and the Lean training.
If you've just joined us at the Just in Time Cafe, use coupon code 20MUFFIN, so that's 20MUFFIN, during checkout. Make sure to use it soon since the coupon will expire at the end of September 2018.
Coming up next is today's special. Elizabeth, give us a little preview of your interview with Dana Wilson.
Of course. Dana's one of those great interview subjects who tells it like it is. I learned a few things about getting the voice of the customer and that it's not all about the voice. They actually get video. She's worked in 5 different industries, including government, so she has seen it all. She is plain spoken, funny, and a joy to talk to, so do not miss this interview. Hi, and welcome to today's special. I'm honored to be speaking today with Dana Wilson, Vice President of Customer Experience Assurance at Comcast Cable. Welcome, Dana.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here today.
Most of you are aware of Comcast, the cable Wi-Fi juggernaut, but I like to read the purpose statements of the firms where our guests work, and I like Comcast, which is to create incredible technology and entertainment that connects millions of people to the moments and experiences that matter most. So it has like nice impact to it. And Dana's role at Comcast puts her on the front lines of delivering on that mission. Dana is responsible for leading end-to-end improvement initiatives to transform the experience for Comcast customers. So Dana's work makes things better for a lot of our listeners, including me. A little more about Dana. Comcast is the 5th industry of Dana's career. She's worked in management consulting, the chemical industry, utilities, and municipal industries. I was particularly interested in Dana's work at the Philadelphia Gas Works and City of Philadelphia. We're big champions of process improvement in government, and Dana was involved in improving their information call center along with a lot of other areas. Another cool fact about Dana is that she holds a Bachelor of Science degree in chemical engineering from Drexel University, and she's a certified Six Sigma Black Belt. Amazing background, Dana. You are clearly a powerhouse package.
Thank you.
I learned about Dana from Sally Toyster, head of operational excellence for Marriott Hotels and a guest of this program. Both Sally and Dana were on a Women in Leadership panel at an operational excellence conference. We love highlighting the work that women do in the quality field, so I'm truly happy to have Dana as a guest today.
Thank you.
Dana, I've got a few questions for you. So, for starters, I'm sure a lot of our listeners use Comcast, which means we're all probably feeling the effects of your good work. So given your role of improving customer experience, can you describe just one of your improvement efforts?
Sure. So, when we embarked upon this journey about 3 years, we're now in our fourth year, but we have 3 years under our belts now. The first thing we looked at, one of the first processes we looked at was our onboarding process. So it's really the time in which a customer purchases service with us, activates that service, and stays with us for their first 90 days. And we took, the time to really understand what our customers were experiencing during that first 90 days. We saw what areas that we had, challenges or presented friction for customers, and we went in and essentially dissected that journey for our customers to make some serious improvements. So things like, you know, being able to provide a level of service to our customers within that first 90 days that really, you know, can help educate them on the products and services that they have. Or for instance, we've also with their installations, you know, being able to have them installed in a timely fashion and guarantee that as well. But across the board, I think we've looked at that experience and we've really improved it for our customers within that time frame. And so that was one of the first orders of businesses. You know, you get service with us, but your sales experience was great. But we wanted to make sure every step of the way that we were able to provide our customer with top-notch experience across that journey.
That's great. And I like your delineation. Like, they have a good sales experience, you know, that the effort and connection is there. But then when you get to installation, and this is probably true for lots of different products and services, you know, that's a different group they're dealing with. That's a kind of a handoff. And you're saying, well, now we have to make sure that's as good. And that's great. That's a really... It's a cool
Absolutely.
Focus.
Absolutely. And what we found, and when we evaluated the experience, you know, we're looking at not only our operational data, but we're actually evaluating and looking at, you know, what our customers were saying. So, you know, through our NPS scores, net promoter scores, and looking at verbatims, we could see where customers, you know, felt pain that we didn't necessarily see in our operational metrics. And so being able to make sure that we're with those handoffs, we found that with every handoff, that's another opportunity for us to break the experience for the customer. So we have to get really, really good at those, right? And so that was a big change and shift for our company as well.
So you've got good voice of the customer. You just mentioned verbatims and the different sources you've got. So you're really listening and hearing exactly what they're saying, which is nice.
Absolutely. And we're calling our customers back. So not only at our frontline level, but we've instituted a Net Promoter System where we're both listening to our customers, but also our employees. And so our employees have the opportunity to elevate things that they see as potential issues or blockers that inhibit them from being empowered to do their job every day, which ultimately affects our customers as well. And we're addressing those, but also we're hearing from our customers and actually calling them back. So whether they're a promoter and have given us a high score, or they're, you know, in between, kind of in the middle and, you know, not necessarily a promoter or a detractor, but we call everyone back from across the spectrum of scores, and we talk to them. And so it's been really a valuable experience for our employees at every level. We do it at the senior executive level as well. And so we're hearing from our customers directly, we're taking their feedback, and we're using it to improve.
And that's a great addition in there you just brought up, which is, it's not just about the customers, it's also about employees, and that there's obviously a direct connection. So making sure that employees also are finding it easy to provide the good service. So that's a really great point on that one.
Absolutely.
So you've been involved in continuous improvement in a lot of different arenas. Is there any aspect of improving customer experience that surprised you?
One of the things that we took a page out of, usually you see this with designers and folks that do experience design or user design, and they do something called ethnographic studies, or we call them in-home research studies. The thing that surprised me most is that when you actually sit and watch a customer, or a customer allows you to videotape their experience with them, it is so powerful. You get a sense of empathy that you don't normally get if you're, you know, just doing maybe focus groups, or you're doing some of the other traditional means of understanding the customer and their experience. But that video is something that you capture and you can look back at, but also you're in the moment with the customer during their experience. And I think for me in doing this work, having that element added to all of the other pieces and approach that in our approach is incredibly powerful, number one. But number two, it gives you a sense of where you need to go to improve, that you know that this is friction for a customer, and this is an issue that you must solve that is directly related to the experience that you can see right? And so you can show others as well. And so it also has helped us create a platform for change. When people see that video and they, you know, we're human. We're not, I know we're in the world of AI and machine learning, but we're not bots yet. And so when you see someone struggling through an experience with your product or service, it really illuminates the need to go in and where to go when you go to improve upon that experience or that journey for a customer.
So that's striking on a number of levels. Number one, I think everybody's feeling that demand on a service side, like more video. Obviously, you guys are kings of video, but just say at Goaling Six Sigma, you know, we have online training, we have blogs, we have articles, but we have some live video of people going through a process walk, and that so resonates. So the video is really powerful. But the other aspect of what you describe is, you know, written like verbatims, as you were describing, is one way of hearing from a customer, you know, and you have to interpret a lot of times, like, what exactly are they saying? How do I translate that into what would happen in my process to fix that? And the other aspect is, okay, now you could talk to them, but then you still don't have that element of what's on their face?
Yeah.
Because 80% of communication is nonverbal. And I never thought about it, but what a brilliant way to really get voice of the customer is not just voice, it's video.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And, you know, back in many moons ago when I embarked upon, you know, practicing Six Sigma and the methodology, I mean, it was very data-centric, data-heavy, and really gleaned some incredible insights through that process. But in that defined stage, you know, if you have this video, it has been incredibly powerful. To number one, like you said, you get to see the face of the person, you see the body language, you're seeing the issues that are happening, and how does that relate to the process? But you're seeing things that you would never have seen before, and being able to go back to it, right, and say, okay, did we improve this? Yes or no? Let's go back to that person and videotape it again, you know. And so you have this kind of record that tells a story and with more depth and richness than you have just with the data or just, you know, listening on, you know, and calls are great and listening to verbatims or reading verbatims are also great as well. But that experiential piece of that really can get you some rich information and data when you're trying to improve your processes.
I was just yesterday trying to donate money on a website, and the delays in trying to donate kept sending me into this loop. And all I could think of was, I'm trying to do a good thing here. These people are doing good things here. But if they could see my face, if they could see the frustration on my face, and that's just what you see, you really go to that level, which is incredible.
Right. And then, you know, at the end of the day, it touches hearts and minds, right? Again, we are human. And when you have that empathy, you can see that struggle. It actually engenders a sense of, you know, I want to help, right? I want to change. And it helps kind of transition folks that you need along that, you know, in your cross-functional teams as you're looking to improve your processes. When they see that, they have a sense of urgency to help. I've noticed that as well.
That's a great point. So part of everyone's job in this arena is to engage people to actually change things. So if you capture hearts and minds, as you just described, that's engagement that often makes the difference of someone saying, oh, we have to change this, or being more targeted about what has to change because they have such pinpointed feedback.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, many times as we know as practitioners in this field is, you know, people think they have the answer, right? And they say, oh, I already know what's going on there. And they get to see it and it's not quite what they thought, right? And they're seeing it, you know, objectively. It's not Dana Wilson's viewpoint and my creation of a video. It's not my movie. It's a camera rolling, right, with the customer. So yeah. I think for folks that you're working with, it really helps bring it home.
Yeah. You're bringing to mind, I don't know if you remember that, it's years ago now, but it was Meet the Parents and Ben Stiller's at the airport, and the airport person is standing there and she's typing into a keyboard and she's never looking up.
Yes.
And it's that experience, like you can only see a visual of that. And that happened in the hotel industry when people said, you know, what's your customer experience at check-in? They said, well, when people don't look up,
it's really irritating. Exactly. You know, so it was, exactly. And a video would have helped.
Yep.
Could have seen those people being really irritated. So you are a leader in process improvement. So in your role as leader, what do you view as your most important role? What are the key aspects of your role?
Really being a change agent. You know, in this work, it's, you know, I call it yeoman's work. You have to influence. You have to engender a certain level of trust that when you're working with large groups of people, or even small groups of people, to change a process or improve something for the business, you know, that's not easy, especially when no one reports to you in some instances, or where part of the people may, but not everybody does. And so how, you know, a real critical part of the role for me is that, you know, I have to build relationships, gain the trust of folks, also and get them as jazzed and passionate about invoking change at times where, you know, we have to run a business and you have metrics to hit and you know that the customer experience is important, but you still have all these other elements that are weighing on you as a leader. And so how do you bring people along on a journey with you to actually invoke change that will give them the business results and show that they're getting the value out of improving a process? And so for me, that has been one of the core elements of the job.
Great description. And I liked your use of the word journey, that you're on this journey and they're on it with you, hopefully. And the other word you used was trust. So how do you work to build that trust?
Yeah. So, you know, and that's, there's no cookie cutter approach and answer for it, but, you know, really through having sound data, but then you also bring additional information that's not just my point of view, right? And so that people understand that, hey, I'm in this with you. I understand that you're listening to and understanding and being a student a little bit in the beginning is critical, so that people can, you sit and you learn their business, you sit and you learn their function, you're willing to humble yourself no matter what level you are to really be able to sit with people and kind of walk in their shoes. And what I've found is that the more I do that, the more people trust that I'm going to represent, you know, what the issues are and be a great partner, because I'm not going to, you know, do the aha gotcha on people, because most people think when you're improving process or you're doing this work that you're here to unearth all of the, you know, evils that are in a process. And so you have to dispel those myths. And so in order to dispel those myths, you really have to sit and understand and walk in the shoes of that function or that person, their day-to-day and what their concerns are, and then be a support to them. And I think being that support for that person and also kind of giving them the, hey, this is what I'm seeing. This is, you know, something that may be critical to improving, and get them partnering with you is how that trust begins to just blossom and flourish.
That's a great description. And I think a lot of leaders think opposite to that, that they have to come in with a point of view, that that's their role as leaders, to bring that point of view. And you're saying, no, my role is more humble. I need to understand what they do. I have to walk in their shoes. So it's that opposite, not advocacy, it's inquiry, because you're going to have to ask a lot of questions to really understand that.
Yes. And that, you know, people actually value the fact that you care enough to actually understand what they do every day versus coming in with a point of view and acting as if you know what they do every day. And you don't, you may know enough to be dangerous, but many times you don't know enough to be dangerous. So, you know, having that level of humbleness is also been key.
And you're learning the whole time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've learned so much across the years of being a practitioner of process improvement and operational excellence. And, you know, it's incredible what you learn if you just sit back and kind of be a little bit of a human sponge and absorb the information and work with people in that way.
That's great. Human sponge. If you want to be a good leader, be a human sponge. So you mentioned this, you have such an incredible background. So I just want to touch on that. One question about, you know, considering your background in government, you know, we have a lot of people listening that are in government. So that one in particular, it's such a far cry from the high-tech world, you know, but you focused on process improvement in both of those jobs. So is there anything you learned at your during your work in Philadelphia that serves you well today?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Philadelphia is a union town, and being able to, again, get everyone on board when you have certain, you know, fiscal constraints. I think doing the government work is probably the most challenging, because not only we have unions, you have fiscal responsibility, and, you know, in some instances, you don't have the biggest budget. And so how do you actually creatively problem solve in a way that has impact with all of the constraints that are presented to you that are just the nature of whether it be local government or whether it's a utility? You know, that challenge really has crafted my ability to go from industry to industry and use those transferable skill sets to be able to improve business anywhere. Because I think if you think about government, that's probably one of the places that you're most hogtied based on different policies and different practices and also, you know, charters and rules and regs and things like that. And so to be able to invoke change and actually have good business results associated with it is has been illuminating during that experience.
And I think your approach is what matters. You see it as, yes, there's going to be limitations. Yes, there's going to be challenges in every arena. It's not like, I mean, you've experienced a lot of different ones, and so have I, but I've never walked in where it was like, oh, piece of cake, we got this. You know, there's always going to be challenges. And I think your point is, get used to that, you know, view it as there's limitations, you've got restrictions, they're just different. But once you realize you have to then approach those challenges, deal with them, you know, work with people, partner with people, meet them where they are, walk in their shoes, you know, that's what matters wherever you go.
Yes. And be creative, I, in practicing Six Sigma, in the city, I didn't tell people that's what we were doing. You don't have to be formal. You can be informally using the tools, use it as a toolkit to improve and be creative about how you do that. And so it really stretched me from a professional standpoint to how do I creatively, number one, get people to come along with me. But then two, when you're actually executing and going through this, how do I not, you know, be so rigid that I lose people, right? And so that's where the creativity comes in.
Yeah, that's nice. And I think it's a great word to align with this work. Is that you have to get creative. Is there anything I didn't ask you that you would like to tell our listeners?
I just would encourage your listeners to think about this from a, you know, the methodology and the profession is one thing, but don't hog tie yourself into the model in such a way that you stifle your own creativity and your ability to invoke change and improvement in organizations that can be hard. And so always think of many ways to skin a cat, and you're going to get lots of baskets of lemons. I think everybody who's listening to this has had their basket of lemons, but you got to make that lemonade. And so keeping that perspective would be something that, you know, I would want everybody to do and take away from this conversation.
That's nice. Thank you, Dana. How can someone find you if they wanted to communicate with you?
You can find me on LinkedIn. So just Google Dana Wilson Dana Wilson Comcast, and I'm sure I'll come up in a search.
Awesome. You've been listening to the Just in Time Cafe podcast. My guest today has been Dana Wilson of Comcast Cable. Thank you so much for sharing your experience with our listeners, Dana.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This has been awesome.
Don't forget, we've got a new book out. It's called The Problem Solver's Toolkit. It's a condensed guide with fantastic graphics in the format of a road trip, because Elizabeth and I both like road trips sometimes. You can get the Kindle version on Amazon. And if you are just loving this stuff like we are and you want to be exposed to more, you should come to the OpEx Week hosted by IQPC. It's the Business Transformation Leadership Summit. It's going to be in San Diego this month on August 27th through the 29th. And since it's in my hometown, I will be there. Go to the website, check out their awesome lineup of leaders leading lean. It's opexweeksummer.iqpc.com. We'll put it on our website. And also, don't forget to sign up for the next webinar where I provide a primer on using the A3 for problem solving.
Hey, you guys, go to this summit. You could meet the famous Tracy O'Rourke in person. Also, tune in for our next episode where Tracy interviews Tom Root of Zingerman's Mail Order Service, another great storyteller from a truly innovative company.
Thanks for joining the Just in Time Cafe from your car, your office, or maybe your car is your office.
Either way, join us again in 2 weeks.